connected consumer.
Hello, my name is Chris White, and I am the host of Parks Associates podcast, The Connected Consumer. This podcast is all about Parks Associates' data-driven market insights on emerging consumer technology products and services. It features our talented analyst team and industry leaders bringing new and innovative products to market. Throughout this podcast, you're going to get an inside look at all the latest industry trends that are focused on the connected consumer, home automation, security, energy management, connected health and independent living, and digital content and video services. In this episode, we're taking a little bit different direction. My girl Rosie Olpino is not with us, and instead it's just going to be the research team. I think it's going to be an exciting episode because I haven't even had a great chance, honestly, to talk to everyone about what they thought was most interesting at CES. It's been a couple of days, but so we've had a little time to digest and let some things sink in. And so I'm interested in to hear from my research colleagues that cover different sections of the connected home industry and hear what they kind of saw that they noticed and think is going to make a big deal in CES, in the industry going forward. And also hear a little bit from our Parks veterans who have done a bunch of these CES visits and sessions to hear how things were different this year than previous years. So I'm going to first go to Jennifer Kent. She's the Vice President of Research and the leader of our team. Jen, I think you've been to the most CESs of all of us. Maybe Paul has, but we'll hear from him in a second. So could you talk a little bit about how Parks's kind of presence at CES has changed over time, how this one went and how CES went for you overall?
Yeah, absolutely. I do think Paul has me beat. I've gone to many a CES, but we should compare notes on that. This was Parks Associates' 16th year hosting Connections Summit at CES, which is a one-day summit that focuses on the innovations, business models, strategies, partnerships that are making up the connected home market, which is actually a lot of kind of different markets together with a vision of creating a smarter home. So we've been at CES for a long time and, really value this partnership with them. And of course, attendance was down this year, which everybody experienced looking at the show floor and the different media events. But happily, surprisingly, actually, Parks Associates saw just about our summit really had just about normal attendance. And in fact, for certain sessions like the State of the Smart Home session, we were standing room only out the door. And so it was really exciting to see. We were so pleased that people still came. It really speaks, I think, to the interest in the smart home topic and the interest in the connected home. There's a lot of really good momentum that's happening in this space. And I also definitely felt the value of being back at an in-person event and making new connections. I definitely came away, we'll talk about this a little bit, but I definitely came away not only from our event, but from, being at the media events and walking the show floor with a new awareness of companies, saw products I wouldn't have been paying attention to otherwise, that I wouldn't have caught that press release in my email box, right? Made new relationships. So I had a very productive and effective CES, and I was very pleased about that. How about you, Paul?
So I'll reaffirm a lot of that. Where even though, first of all, the attendance, the thing you couldn't miss was that the attendance was much less, and whether that was vendors or that was registered attendees, there was just way less people than normal. Maybe one quarter to one third of the normal amount of traffic, and then also, vendor-wise, there wasn't even a South Hall this year, right? They condensed all of the exhibitors into North Hall, Central Hall, and then for the automotive-related ecosystem to the new West Hall. And so there was a definite change there. But the, as an attendee, the biggest thing was that it was just so much easier to get around this year, which used to be an impossibility because CES is usually a madhouse. Right, half the pictures that you see in the press are of the throngs of people and the massive humanity that's at CES. So, when we're talking one quarter to one third of normal attendance, we're still talking the 40, 50,000 person show, right, in terms of attendees. So it's not a minuscule event by any means this year. However, relative to the size that it normally is, definitely smaller. But as a result of that, you know, a lot of those companies, especially with so many major vendors like Google and Amazon and others pulling out, a lot of those other companies that normally would not get that much focus were much more front and center this year. And you were more likely to come across them because there were there were fewer halls to physically go through. You were much more likely to come across them at the show, at the pre-show press events, and so forth. So I think it was I thought it was a very fruitful show. I mean, maybe the CTA is having a difficult time with the numbers of it. But as an analyst, I think I got quite a lot out of the show regardless.
So yeah, so Paul, speaking of being an analyst, you cover primarily connected entertainment, and CES, I think, kind of started as an entertainment-focused kind of trade show. So could you talk a little bit about the cool entertainment stuff that you saw at CES that you think is going to kind of start a trend going into 2022?
Yes, I have three main areas, but maybe I'll start with the bigger one just because it speaks to CES, because some of the headlines that you always see coming out of CES, they always focus on certain consumer product categories, and TVs is always one that you hear about when you, you know, hear about CES. Oh, this vendor came out with a 100-inch TV this year. Oh, you know, these two vendors, Samsung and LG, are going neck and neck this year to see who can grab the most headlines with their TVs at CES, et cetera. And it happens. So TVs are one of those leading categories. And I think probably, you know, not getting into what vendor is doing what, I think the overall theme, looking at entertainment, looking at TVs, is, you know, what I saw at CES and what's going on in the larger consumer landscape is just that TVs and the hardware that used to be the focus. What kind of screen technology are you using? You know, what's the contrast level this year? Does the remote have a microphone in it? This year, you know, it seems like there's much more focus on the platform as well, right? What operating system is running the TV? What ecosystem is the TV a part of? And so, you know, it's become less so a battle between brands per se, and more so between Samsung's smart TV platform, LG's smart TV platform, Roku versus Google versus Amazon and what have you, where you see, you know, the consumer ecosystem battles you see going on within mobile, within computing and elsewhere coming to TVs. And I think that that's going to continue to define the market going forward, especially because all of these companies now, they realize that the nature of the smart TV business has changed, right? So it's no longer about selling that, you know, the profit margin you make off of that single sale of that TV. They're looking at recurring revenue opportunities, right? So Vizio made more money off of advertising than it did off of selling TVs last year, you know, so did Samsung, I believe. But, you know, for a lot of companies, it is a huge revenue generator to spread their platforms far and wide to make them a source of recurring revenue from advertising and measurement. Right. A lot of the old measurement businesses, I won't say crumbling, but reforming. Right. Nielsen's lost its power. And so you see companies like Vizio's ad business, Samsung's ad business, Roku's ad business, all gaining in power. And so I think for a lot of these companies, a lot of these platform owners, I should say, in the TV business, they're very big on basically spreading their platforms far and wide. So one of the biggest signs of Samsung and LG this year, or actually 2021, agreeing to license their platforms out to third parties, which is something you never would have heard of years ago. But they now realize that the further that they can spread their reach for their software platform, the more recurring revenue they bring in, even if it's not from their own hardware. So I think that, yes, I'll let the mic go in a second, but I think, you know, if we look at entertainment and CES and, you know, what are some big changes there? I think, you know, that was a big trend in the TV category that was kind of impossible to miss.
Yeah. So Kristen, you cover home services at Parks, which I kind of generically think of as being the kind of mobile and internet silo, and you probably have a more sophisticated look at it than that. But I was wondering if you kind of had a take on that too, since the TV is becoming a more kind of sophisticated device in the home.
Sure, absolutely. I think I've been seeing a lot of what Paul's seeing going on in the industry. There's just the very heavy emphasis right now on the platforms and what they can bring. And a lot of the platform players are, of course, looking to compete with each other for viewing time. Something that I noticed going on at CES this year, which is, I suppose, something of a continuing theme from some of the prior years, there is a lot of emphasis on the smart home ecosystems, particularly coming out of the television. So Samsung, of course, has had SmartThings for a while, and you can use the their Tizen smart TVs as the central hub for your SmartThings devices. More and more smart TV makers are looking to kind of follow this model. They're introducing their own smart home lineups that are now integrated with their televisions. And the television can really act as that command and control center, which I thought was very exciting. So Hisense brought their game this year, TCL. So it looks like this is really one of the directions that the market is going to go. So I think certainly for everyone playing on smart home space, that's very exciting. We've also been hearing a lot of very interesting things around next-gen TV, or ATSC 3.0, which launched last year, and it looks like it's going to be accelerating going into this year. So this is kind of a new TV technology that will allow a consumer to access kind of the television over the air with an antenna, and they will actually get some of the features that they would normally get using a web-based connection. Kind of provided that they are hooked into Wi-Fi, this can actually be a two-way connection as well. So I think a lot of players in the entertainment ecosystem are particularly excited around that.
Oh, that's cool. I was thinking, yeah, so I was hearing a little bit about the TV in talking to some SmartThings people, and it got me thinking a lot about the senior care use case, because I feel like we're like, a lot of the senior care kind of control direction in the industry is like around speakers, smart speakers. I feel like introducing, like convincing my parents to talk to their speaker might be harder since it's something new. Like it would be a new device I'm putting in there. I don't know. My parents are pretty old. So talking about them as seniors, they would be sad if they watch this. They should watch this, by the way, to support their son. I don't know if they do, but everyone had like, you know, like, well, senior people are watching TV. And so I just imagine this huge like revenue opportunity for everyone who's kind of my age, you know, like 40-ish upper middle class people buying a new TV for their parents, and like that almost being like a Trojan horse for getting some smart home control possibilities in there, and then leveraging that into the whole like ecosystem of telehealth and you know, PERS devices and every other little thing that you want to use to keep an eye on your old parents. Maybe that will be an easier sell for them than a speaker. So I that got me thinking about like just kind of a totally new potential for that. Cause we see that, you know, all of our research shows that caregivers are more interested even buying devices for their families than for themselves, even in some cases. So I think that that's going to be a huge opportunity. And kind of, so thinking about also our home environments and health a little bit, Jen, I think you want to talk a little bit about some connected health devices you saw when we were together at one of the events. I saw you going and talking to all the air filtration people that you could, and there was a lot of them. So I was interested in hearing what you kind of heard from that sector.
Yeah, absolutely. So Chris is talking about PepCom, which is one of the media events, one of the main kind of three media events that happen in the evenings around CES. And I really value these events because they kind of curate some of the exhibitors, and it's not quite so overwhelming as the show floor. And as Paul mentioned, you know, the fact that there weren't as many exhibitors this year actually meant that I feel like I talked to almost everybody at PepCom. Absolutely a ton of air filtration work going on. And we really saw this coming, of course, out of COVID-19. It's a respiratory condition. There was some small, you know, innovation happening around indoor air quality, particularly around HVAC players, you know, very industry specific before COVID, but a lot of actually focus on the quality of air outside your home, right? Pollution, allergens, and what does the air quality mean for your personal health, especially if you have asthma or other respiratory conditions. Our data does show that coming out of COVID-19, consumers definitely have strong concerns about the quality of air inside their home and interest in products that can provide better, either monitor air quality, detect if there are some issues with the air quality, and actually provide, you know, cleaner, purer air. And so the industry is responding. There are a lot of air filtration companies out there, which will ultimately be good for the consumer. You know, more innovation, more products, more choice, bring down prices, but also some innovation. There was one company that we talked to, Atmifizer, I believe, that has a product. Really, it's the technology that likely will get, you know, incorporated in other products, but that uses sound waves to consolidate very, very, very tiny particles together so that they can be captured by kind of traditional filters or HEPA filters where they may normally get pushed through. Or if you were to try to capture air particles that were that small, the amount of energy that you would need to force airflow through your HVAC would be horribly energy inefficient. So the ability to add a new technology, right, to kind of clump these smaller particles together to capture them, that's what I love about CES, because you see these new, like, it's a component, it's a specific technology that hopefully a couple of years down the line will start to become the norm, or, you know, maybe a premium feature and then work its way down the stack. But I'm very excited to see that, and I think that there's a lot of interest around that. That use case. So lots of air filtration at CES.
Yeah, that guy was great because he was trying to convince us that we should use the word, like, what was it, englobulation? The globules that it was creating out of the small particles. And I was like, I'm not going to, I mean, I guess I just did say it on a podcast. So
you did. And like, who knows for remembering like what the word was?
I probably like, didn't remember. I should have looked it up this
small
now.
Small particles where I took that.
Yeah. So also at PepCom, something that I really liked, and I spent a lot of time talking to these guys because I cover smart energy, the GAF nailable solar panels. Yes. Super, super impressed me. There was a bunch of different interesting things about them and a couple things I learned about a new way to think about home solar. So one of the things I thought was interesting about the product is that the form factor of it is designed to be nailable. And their idea is that, you know, pro channel can use those. But another thing I thought was interesting is that the nodes are closer together. Mm-hmm. So that you can do a better job of kind of playing Tetris on your roof and working around where your chimney is and all your different HVAC, you know, things breaking the chimney to try and get more coverage of sort of solar collection technology on a small roof. And so we were talking about how that type of thing is going to be a big deal, because it'll allow people to have townhomes, people who live in smaller homes, like he was talking about, using solar almost as an equity tool, and how they have a big project where they're putting solar panels on old shotguns in the Ninth Ward in New Orleans, which I was excited about because I lived in New Orleans for a couple of years, but kind of like helping some upper lower class people that live in that area have access to technology that is usually kind of like a upper class kind of technology, you know, tens of thousands of dollars to put big panels on your presumably big house that gets plenty of sun. So I think that's really interesting. Jen, you talked to them for a bit too. What did you think about GF, what they're doing?
Yeah, definitely one of my, I feel like, rock stars coming out of CES, and they won a bunch of awards, but I do think that they're it's well-earned, right? The ability to not attach solar panels to your roof, but where the roof shingle is the solar panel. I mean, yeah. It's a totally different way of thinking about solar for a homeowner who may have concerns right now of whether or not the solar panel is going to damage your roof, or is a poor install going to lead to leaks and I'm going to have all these issues, right? Also, you know, right now, a lot of the solar installs happen from specifically solar companies. And what they're doing is trying to make a product that roofers, traditional roofing companies, can offer themselves as just an upsell, right? So you here in Texas, it's all about hail damage. We get these crazy thunderstorms that come through, hail inevitably comes through, all the roofing companies come through and say, let me inspect you and see if you need new roof. And so the insurance companies love that. But so, you know, the ability to say, hey, we can put on a normal shingle, or if you want, we can install a solar shingle. You know, and I mean, it's a totally different way of selling solar. It's a totally different way of considering solar, buying solar, right, from a consumer perspective. So I really think that it has the potential to be a pretty big disruptor in the solar space. And there's a ton of focus and money in the energy sector right now. So it's great timing.
Yeah. And I think there's another barrier kind of the moment of sale, like creating that kind of point of sale experience is important because you already have the financing together to do your roof work. Whereas yes. if you're just a random solar guy showing up and knocking on a door, you say, okay, do you want to spend $5,000 or $10,000 or whatever it is, putting a bunch of gear on your roof, then that person has to go figure out the financing. And so yep. you already have your HELOC or you already have your insurance payment or whatever all lined up to get your roof repaired, either because a hurricane in New Orleans or a fire in California or Texas, anything, apparently godforsaken state of Texas that can have major tornadoes and hail and also power outages. So anything that happens, you already have the financing together. So that's a kind of a quick way to get solar on the roof. And then, you know, that's going to help the technology kind of break through where it is right now, where it's kind of stagnating a little bit because all the interested people already got on it. So like in terms of moving into the early adopters, I think that's going to be really important. Yeah. So when we were hanging out, Jen, another thing we talked about is how we are lame parents now. And a way that we express that is by buying projectors to, during the pandemic, help us babysit our children by putting on Disney or Pixar content. Is this a fair way to depict this?
Yeah. And to add to that, definitely parenting and also get them out of the house. So the ability to like throw a projector, for us at least, like we've been setting it up on like an outdoor deck sort of situation that we have at night after the sun goes down. And yes, anything to get the kids like out of the house and occupy them. I'm all on board.
And it's a little safer too. You can have the neighborhood kids come by without.
Yeah, and it's outdoors and you don't feel like, indoor germ situation.
So Paul, you were talking about projectors a little bit too as a big thing. And Samsung's getting a lot of time on this call. So I hope they'll think about sponsoring us in the future. But you're talking a little bit about Samsung projector innovations.
They put a lot of effort, Samsung did, in terms of marketing, production, a lot of the press cycle around the Freestyle, right? The Samsung Freestyle projector. And so it's interesting because you have a company that would really love to sell TVs traditionally, suddenly validating the projection category, and not just some giant expensive projector that they would love to make a lot of margin on, but no, a portable category. And so it's a real validation of kind of the use case of the projector, the acceptance of the projector, them wanting to be part of this trend that they see going on, jumping into the category. And that thus far, the portable projector category, so to speak, has really been, hasn't had huge major players in it, right? I mean, you had some self-contained projectors, and then those that, had like an operating system built in where you wouldn't need to necessarily hook up a Fire TV stick or an external streaming device or a laptop or something to feed it content. You know, they usually use some
simple Android. Simple Android.
Yeah, OS, simple Android. So not very finished products. And suddenly, Samsung has jumped into the category. It's got their full-blown smart TV platform. It ties in the same interface you see on the smart TVs. And it's all self-contained. And, they brought some things to it that other people aren't doing, like the ability to hang it from a light socket, right? Screw it into the light bulb socket, and then it hangs there, and it's powered from it. Or to power it off a portable battery pack, right? A power bank, so to speak. It's something that is not really possible with a lot of other projectors. And so it really is a validation of, people. I think not just that the category's already been sort of building over a while, but that they understand that lifestyles have changed. People want to be outside more, projecting more, or improvising in the spaces that they have, right? Trying to use that wall or the side of their house or what have you. And again, it's just very interesting coming from a company that would normally sell you big, gigantic, expensive products, really jumping into this lifestyle product. So I think it's a huge validation.
Yeah. So one of the use cases, again, like in addition to it being good recreation on a Saturday night to have movie night over, another way to do it is to try and stash your kid while you're working from home and he's home because your school or daycare is closed for COVID. So when I'm projecting and working in the room next door in my little home office here, a lot of people are living that lifestyle, right? Like me and Jen are home right now and see in our backgrounds, or the listeners at home can know me and Jen are working from home. And you can see that there's a lot of work from home devices also at CES. So Paul or Kristen, did you guys want to talk about stuff that you saw that are kind of working with, you know, kind of meeting that new need that's gotten so much larger since the pandemic?
Sure, well, I'll jump in. I guess for me, you know, I've spent some time in a pro AV landscape and the collaboration scene and all the vendors in that arena. And so it's been interesting now to see that a lot of consumer products are reflecting the work from home trend over the last year and a half to 2 years. And so by that, I mean, you have, you know, companies that formerly were very call center and enterprise centric, like Poly and Jabra. A lot of their designs are all being very refined more towards being consumer centric, right? The textures, the colors, the shapes, and, you know, certain functionality and features, and how they're marketed, right? Even just the flavor of how they're being marketed is really going more towards consumer. And then you see consumer centric companies like your Samsung, LG, HP, and so on, focusing on more of what used to be professional level features and functionality in their products as well. So, you know, that would be things like call quality, right? And headphones and earbuds, you know, that was an afterthought before, right? You just threw one microphone into your headphones and that was it. You could do calling, but now that's not good enough, right? So we see earbuds even getting 2, 3 and more mics per earbud, not just for noise cancellation for the person using the earbuds, rejecting what's going on around you, but also to reject the noise around you for the person on the other end of the call, right? So you hear less of dogs barking, machinery, and whatever's going on around you. And that used to be less of a priority. And so just overall, you know, we see a lot of melding of worlds here, even Samsung and others talking about using webcams with your smart TV, in laptops, you name it. You know, the enterprise laptop, so to speak, is kind of no more, right? You see the old square boxy designs of old that used to be just a part of being an office laptop or an enterprise laptop. That's going away, right? Softer corners, you know, more aesthetically pleasing designs, and even the webcam, right? The webcam used to be just an afterthought, but Apple, HP, everybody else, now the trend is HD webcams with better low light performance. And even the one microphone in your laptop of old, dead. Right. Everybody wants to put in 2 or more arrayed microphones with, you know, noise cancellation and echo cancellation algorithms because they know how much people are using their laptops to work from home now. So it really is just the emerging of worlds. And really that I would have to say that even though maybe some of those things were going on a really slow pace before, yeah, they've been vastly accelerated by the pandemic.
So how about you, Kristen? What did you see in terms of work from home driven accelerated technologies, maybe having to do with like more need for data movement or more need for kind of healthcare maintenance in an environment where everyone's doing tons of telehealth now?
I mean, those companies don't really exhibit at CES much, so not really much of a presence there. Mostly on the CE side of things, kind of as Paul was saying, there's just a lot more blurring between the categories. So you used to have these clearly defined consumer category versus the professional category, and gamers are maybe their own special slice. Now there's, I think, more awareness that the people who are using these products are using them for really all of these different use cases at once. So even a company like Razer, which focuses pretty heavy on the gamer segments, they're having more and more devices that you can use maybe for professional use. So not just the RGB kind of lighting.
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, in terms of like, that's another thing I noticed. I guess this being my first CES, I have a maybe different perspective in terms of like, I wasn't noticing what was weird, but I was kind of looking around and trying to see what was getting a lot of real estate. And I feel like there was tons and tons of drone and robotic content there, and like drones that do all sorts of different things. But one thing that I was noticing in terms of like a mix of use cases was this idea of using wireless power to power drones and robots, rather than having them sort of have to stop and dock and have like a human plug them in or something like this, just the idea of powering them as they kind of whiz by. And I even talked to Blink Charging about EVs, and the president of Blink was saying like maybe in the future, that's the way we're going to charge cars, is with wireless charging. I mean, not now, the technology isn't there now for doing this, but like just the idea of pulling up to a parking spot and having your EV charge just passively without you plugging anything in. And then, you know, you get the telematics or infotainment or whatever center charges you with some like help from FinTech. This whole like just kind of eliminating the entire idea of us ever stopping to charge, and like just passively, we're just driving our car around, and anytime we stop, it's charging wirelessly at some sort of parking scenario. So I thought that was like a wild high tech future for the future to think about down the road, kind of in a post EV boom moment. You were nodding, Kristen. Did you see some cool drone robotic stuff going on?
I would say kind of more on the wireless charging angle. There's certainly been, I think, a lot of advancements in the kind of passive energy harvesting sort of technology. So we've seen, I think, more and more smaller devices are really turning to this. So being able to just harvest energy from the Wi-Fi that might be going on in the home or maybe in a more industrial setting. So I think some of the remote controls coming out nowadays do have that. You will never have to worry about replacing a dead battery again for some of these, which is very helpful.
Yeah, that's cool.
I think we can expect to see this technology make its way into more and more IoT devices, especially IoT devices that are going to be inside of consumers' homes. And as you were saying, some of the drones and robots, a lot of those aren't necessarily intended for a consumer kind of audience. They're more on the industrial side of things, business to business. So in the sorts of environments where they are likely to be actually used and deployed, there's certainly, I think, a lot of potential there for different types of wireless charging and energy harvesting as well. The big challenge really is and remains just the efficiency of everything. You do lose quite a lot of energy if you're trying to wirelessly beam. I think maybe a very, very high capacity device in particular, you're going to be losing a whole lot of power. And just at this moment in time, it's kind of particularly the renewable energy kind of generation, especially maybe if you have a home where you have these massive solar shingles on, you're generating a lot of your own power. It becomes, I think, more of a viable use case. I don't know if for cars we will ever see wireless charging, but it does certainly sound exciting.
So everyone who doesn't know, Kristen is always the negative one in the conversation. You mean we, maybe our grandkids will, Kristen, okay? You don't know, someday.
Like playing the game of which company to buy this year. It's really
good. Do you want to share that on air? Do you want to go on record?
I'm the fifth right now.
Okay, yeah, that's probably smart. Okay, but yeah, you mentioned small devices and how that impacts IoT. Like, so many of our IoT devices are just little sensors, right? Like, we spend a lot of time focusing on the sexier ones that have cameras and AI and blah blah blah, but there's a lot of them are just little sensors that need to get power somewhere. Usually it's little batteries, and you have to go digging through your attic or under your water heater to, you know, change your moisture sensor. But the idea that you could just have a plug-in device that is, the idea of harvesting Wi-Fi like ambient power is wild to me, but in terms of just plugging into the outlet and having it just kind of point at the sensors instead, and then like you were saying about never changing a remote, like I don't want to change my moisture sensor batteries because I have to do some crawling around and stuff. I'm too fancy to do that, you guys. I don't like messing around with my HVAC or like getting my hands dirty. So I am happy to someday have them just kind of be self-sufficient because I have some magic device that's sending power to them.
It's a major thing in the smart home. I mean, making the smart home work and maybe making the mass market interested in smart home is all about putting less jobs on the user, right? Like we make smart home pretty hard right now. And like the idea that you should even have to think about your water sensors every so often, like that's not what we want, right? I mean, the water sensors, you should almost put them there. It's an insurance device for yourself. You will never want to have to use them, right? It's giving you peace of mind. And so you really want to have to set it and forget it, not set it and then be like, oh, a battery replacement. And where did I put those? And so I think ambient energy harvesting for battery life for this is huge for the smart home. I'm super excited about it. But Kristen's skepticism in general is like so needed to bring us down to earth. So I love it.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm very excited about energy harvesting, especially when you get to some of these. So there's more and more, I think, apartment complexes that are launching their own kind of smart home deployments, including for building management. So it certainly takes a lot of load off of the effort of maintaining these systems.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, that's a cool use case. So you mentioned, Jen mentioned smart home, make my life easy is supposed to be what it's doing. Something that we heard a lot of people talking about at CES that is supposed to make our consumers' lives easier in terms of managing their smart home is Matter, right? Everyone was talking about Matter. So like, I know we talk about Matter a lot. We have a good relationship with the Matter people. A lot of our contacts are like, we're contacts with a bunch of people on the Matter board. So in my heart, I sort of thought, are we like sort of, not biased exactly, but it's like, do we talk about it more than just the industry at large? And then being with the industry at large at CES, kind of for my first time, in years, I heard everyone talking about it. It sounded like even people that I had wondered if they were going to be a little bit against it and wanted to drag their feet, like because they're currently operating on different standards or or running standards. I talked to the Z-Wave people, and they were all about it. And I was like, is this a competitor for you, kind of? And they were like, we don't, their position was more along the lines of like, we don't care. This is going to be the acceleration for the smart home that we need. Once this happens, this is going to be a big deal. Everyone was on board, enthusiastic. Did you guys hear that around too?
Yeah, definitely. Matter was everywhere, everything. I mean, I think that there's good reason that the biggest tech companies that never work together decided to work together for this, because the only way that you get to that point where smart home delivers on making your life easier, as opposed to like actually giving you more jobs to do, is to solve the fragmentation and the interoperability and take a lot of that job away from the consumer, so we can start focusing on all the other great innovation that's going to come after. So I think a lot of the talk at the CES really validates what Matter's doing, and product launch has been really pushed back obviously into this year in 2022, so it's still a lot of wait and see for a lot of good reasons, including supply chain and chipsets and all that stuff. I think you're right, it's a nice time for us to hear whether or not the excitement's real or just for those who are core in smart home, and I think there's a lot of validation that everybody's looking forward to it.
Yeah, I guess I would just like to maybe add a little bit to what Jennifer is saying. Smart home isn't really a mass market yet. Right. There are a lot of limiting factors right now, and one of the big limiting factors is integration and getting devices to actually talk to each other and talk back to whatever you're using as the hub. So it's extremely fragmented. It's extremely patchwork. It's extremely frustrating. So the hope is that this type of technology can help actually make things a lot more easy in terms of deployments, whether that's a deployment by a consumer or by maybe an apartment manager, kind of larger scale, or even by any business as well. So it takes a lot of load off. So I think for a lot of device categories, we haven't even reached 10% adoption.
That's right. Yeah, exactly. So our major, I think we have 37% of US broadband households saying that they own at least one smart home device right now, not including smart speakers and smart displays, which are actually the majority of households now. But we consider those, audio first devices. I mean, they are speakers at their core, and they're very important points of control for the smart home. But the way Park Associates categorizes them, they're not core smart home devices. So 36% of households own at least one smart home device. But then when you look at the individual product categories, even the lead categories like video doorbells, smart thermostats, network cameras are only at like 12 to 15%. And a bunch of those that have been around for a long time are still kind of wallowing in the sub 10% adoption. Right. And we see small, slow but steady growth, but really for any of these individual product categories, we're nowhere near mass adoption.
Yeah, being able to solve the interoperability issue could help catapult sales for a lot of these guys. And they're really focused on that more than they are competing with each other.
Yep.
I had something to weigh in there. I think, I think even if we discount any, any potential inhibition among some of the participating companies as to whether their matter compatible layer for their product actually is full functionality, or they hold some things back that are only accessible through their individual app or what have you, that, you know, matter in general, I think potentially has a lot of really great implications for the industry in terms of interoperability. It's an evolution, kind of like a huge jump forward that we saw from, if I think about the smart speaker world and, you know, how voice assistants became prominent. If you remember back only a few years, there were all these competing standards in the smart home space, right? You know, all these different alliances and allegiances and ecosystems. And as smart speakers and smart displays became a, you know, vital point of interaction with smart home control, and certainly Google and Amazon started pushing their assistant ecosystems, suddenly all of those different, you know, smart home compatibilities and alliances, they became irrelevant, right? It became two upward funnels. You had to be compatible with either Google Assistant or Amazon Alexa, right, as a common point of control and interoperability. And, you know, that's one way in which all of that confusion that stood to confuse consumers and kind of stymie the progress of the industry in terms of mainstream acceptance, you know, that was one evolution where a lot of that mix and confusion became clarified very quickly, right? You had to fit into one of these two different voice assistant funnels. And I think that, you know, similar to that huge change, Matter potentially has the ability to create one huge upward funnel where, okay, you have to at least also be compatible with Matter, right, to be a successful smart home product. And I think that once that happens, once you have things really able to interoperate at some level, then it leads into my next point, which is that for a lot of these companies, normally you'd never think of as wanting or needing to work together, right? Google and Amazon, they're powerful enough. They don't necessarily need to work together. But in the end, I think the real power in some of these applications of all these different devices working together comes from fusion, right? Understanding how to make them all work together intelligently and what companies have the most resources to come up with the development funds to come up with these really great fused resources and to strike all the agreements with all the different device partners to get access to all these functionalities that really work great in these really intelligent scenarios. Your Googles, your Amazons, and so forth, they have the ability to fund all of that. So for them, you know, in the end, they're happy to work together as long as it gets them further along to a goal where they continue to be able to exert control in the way that huge companies can exert control, right? They can do it smarter. They can do it on a more broader basis. They have the funds to really differentiate and distinguish themselves from the smaller vendors. So I think, you know, for them, they don't necessarily see Matter as a inhibitor, but rather as a significant kind of building block that still gets them where they want to go, right? I mean, that they understand it's not necessarily about their individual rivalries anymore. So I think it's a great development for the industry.
Yeah, it's a really big deal. It's something we're going to obviously be watching. And speaking of working together smarter and better, Parks Associates research team, we work together smarter and better on this call. I appreciate you guys being on Connected Consumer. I would like to go around and give everyone a chance to talk about kind of, you know, at least plug your Twitter, LinkedIn, if you want, and also talk about any recent reports. Jen, do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. So I'm at Jennifer M. Kent. I think pretty quick, pretty easy on Twitter, but certainly reach out to me on LinkedIn as well. I like to plug the whole, as Vice President of Research, I like to plug the whole research department. You guys are doing a great job. I love seeing all the research that's coming out on both the smart home and entertainment and connected health. I mean, oh gosh, the connected health space has changed so much over the past 2 years. So we had some fantastic research that published on virtual care, on independent living and senior care, on the wearables, health and fitness space that came out this year. We're looking at the evolution of the work and what it means and what the technology and home services play is for consumers who are working at home, you know, consumer data, trending data, industry research. So we want to be answering the questions that are most important to our technology audience out there. So we've got a lot coming, and I'm just going to plug you guys doing a great job. So keep up all the great deep insights and analysis. Love to read it. How about Paul?
Okay. So I'm Paul Erickson. My Twitter is Paul Erickson AV. And I think, you know, recently just got done getting off the latest edition of our quarterly OTT video market tracker, which, you know, profiles all of the numerous video streaming services out there today. And I'm currently finishing up a report on a smart TV market. So the TV, you know, subject was a very front and center topic for me already today. And I'll be diving into our CE dashboard next and a few other things coming up over the next quarter. So it's definitely going to be a very interesting year on the, you know, the CE and entertainment side, just because of the nature of how video consumption and everything else is changing with the increased time at home and pandemic and now the Omicron and everything else, you know, and how that's going to affect things again. So entertainment is certainly a category that's really, really interesting to the industry today. We hope to provide some of the clarity that they need.
Awesome. Thank you, Paul. Kristen?
Sure. I'm Kristen Hack, Director of Research over Connectivity and Health Tech here at Parks. You could try tracking me down on Twitter. Unfortunately, I'm not usually there these days. LinkedIn is going to be your best bet. And you can just find me by my name, Kristen Hannock. I'm pretty sure I'm the only one on the internet. I do have, I think, another person with the same name, but the only thing I know about her is that she plays the saxophone.
Okay.
So I'm fairly easy to find. I think in terms of kind of some of the research I've been doing, I've mostly been living in the custom world for these past few weeks, past month or so. So I could tell you about some of that, but then I'd have to kill you. So covered under an NDA. I think in terms of some of the syndicated research that I can talk about, I've been doing a lot of interesting things in the health tech space. So as Jennifer was talking about some of the really radical changes that we've seen in telehealth and telemedicine, as well as kind of the remote patient monitoring space, connected health devices. There's a lot of very exciting things going on in the smartwatch and wearables world as well that we've been covering. And I do definitely recommend taking a look at some of that. In terms of kind of the connectivity space, the home services dashboard is one of the products that I've been working on as well. So really looking at how kind of demand for home internet is really been accelerated and fueled by this pandemic, as well as really what people are looking for. So there's this really exciting new world of Wi-Fi services that have been kind of coming up. So if you don't know, your Wi-Fi router can actually download apps that are available from your service provider, and you can get all kinds of really new types of functionality out of it. So there's new motion sensing that you can do, which actually detects maybe an intruder in your home, or if you have maybe kind of a loved one or an elderly parent who might be wandering around, you can make sure that they're actually there. There's new things going on in cybersecurity as well, so you can have the whole home cybersecurity just from your router. So I think lots of exciting things in that space.
Yeah, definitely. Wi-Fi motion is really fascinating too. As someone who like spends a bunch of time covering cameras and in the security use case, having Wi-Fi as another option for motion detection is a really cool thing. So I'm Chris White, one of the senior analysts here. I cover smart home and smart energy. I have a report recently that is about home control apps that I think is super relevant to the Matter conversation. It's called All Apps Aren't Equal. It's about how consumers make decisions about whether they want to use their dedicated app that they got with a single device or whether they want to try and use a whole home app to control. And Matter is going to come in and change all of that. We also asked the consumers a couple questions about Matter, and their answers are really interesting as kind of a preview of how it's going to be received by the mainstream public when the Matter devices start hitting the shelves with the little Matter logo on there. So definitely look us up at partsassociates.com. Also, continue to please follow us here, subscribe on YouTube, rate and review on Apple Podcasts, and leave us comments in any of those spaces. Also, follow me. I'm at C White Insights. Also, follow Rosie, who is not here today, but we still love her. So follow at Rosie Olpino on Twitter. And thank you, everyone. We're still kind of working on plans of what the next few episodes are going to be like, but we're planning on having a bunch more feedback from our analysts on here. I know Jen wants to do a a podcast episode. So we're going to hear more from Jennifer Kent, our director, I think probably about aging in place. I haven't pitched that on you yet, but I think that's the hot topic that we're going to have you cover. So,
sure.
Okay, cool. Unless you object and have a new idea, but otherwise aging in place is what we were thinking for you. And then also, Paul, we want to have you on and have you talk about more of your entertainment topics. So sure. Listeners, look forward to that. And also, I'm sorry, yeah, follow at Parks Associates as well. That's the kind of mothership on Twitter there for us. And let us know what you guys would like to hear and what kind of research needs you have. Okay, thanks everyone for joining us.
Thanks.
I appreciate everyone's time today.
Bye, thanks.
All right, take care. The Connected Consumer.